Hi, folks. Just letting you know that this hopefully is the only one that I'll have to issue a... It's not a content warning. It's a quality of content warning. Unfortunately, even though the artist guest of honor at PaizoCon, Remco Troost, was the closest person to the microphone just did not like his voice. And so it barely picks him up. Whereas James Sutter, who's sitting next to him, is picked up way louder than Sarah Robinson, the other speaker on the panel. And I did set up the recorder late for this one. And my original intent was to get the video camera in there. And I, again, because I was late, that just did not happen. And so I don't recommend people actually listen to this one unless they really want to strain their ears to hear a few anecdotes about Starfinder art that they can't see. The audio exists, and some people may appreciate whatever they can get out of this seminar, but this is the best I could do on this one without completely slowing down the entire production. So to make it up for people, we are going to be releasing Ultimate Wilderness Preview, which was supposed to be Friday's seminar. It's releasing today. And I'm sorry, this is the best we could do with this. On with the show. Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
That was a great idea that Taylor had. And so, yeah, I mean, this stuff just sort of evolves over time. But we also, we're going to create some new races from scratch. The Besk and the Shearing. Yeah, so kind of the same process there.
So the description of the Shearing is what Sutter gave to me. And then I put down, like, just... little quick keywords for him to follow, and then again a lot of references, and then but not so much that he's restricted to those, because I want to give him a little more freedom than since these are going to be brand new, we don't really know what they look like, what we had in our heads. So I just, you know, just this is the base, and then we just let him go to his creative side. So if you want to explain to, like, how we came to the shooting that we have today.
Yeah, it's like just to this. So indeed, I got this, and it's already quite rich in story, which is a good thing for a character. She needs storytelling, not just doing badass characters that need to be sold. And then we started sketching around, and a couple of sketches came up. I don't know what happened here.
I have you. The next one we came up with was the Besk.
Yeah.
And here's another idea board.
The one before is the kind of work we saw, which I will send to Sarah, and then there's back and forward going on.
So right down
here
is a little. Sorry?
Yeah. Oh. I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll be louder.
Okay. So right down here is the one that very first initial concept. And again, idea boards, references, description of what if they're going to be in the game, and then keywords, and then so what we got from that was this little beginning sketch. Yep. And then
it was pretty much spot on, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Yep. So you can see the difference between what we initially got from Taylor to more of a
and which one? That's the lower left hand.
Yeah.
And we should note that that actually came out of, there was a whole lineup of a bunch of those, right, with different postures, different kind of, you know, thicknesses, and then that's the one that Sarah was like, that's it. And we went, oh, okay, well, like, look at, like, the little bone beard it's got, like, that's cool, right?
Mm-hmm. So then, so yeah, I mean, it's basically, I love putting these idea boards together. Like, yep. The favorite part, yep, of any of the work that I do, because it's really a bit, three-person or more than three-person collaboration between words and art and artists. And then when we get sketches back and I show everybody, everybody's all excited and they put their two cents in, and sometimes I'm like, nope, that's dumb. So
that happens a lot.
Those two wonder.
But actually, I should note one thing just about art direction in general, like that Sarah taught me early on that I think has been like the most useful thing in my career in dealing with artists and whatnot is like giving just enough description to get the artist excited and on the same page, and then get the hell out of the way, right? You know, if you write a paragraph of an art order of like, oh, he looks like this, and he's got this, that, and the other thing, what you're going to get is going to be a lot less interesting than if you tell, you know, somebody really talented, you know, like, all right, yeah, here, lizard dude, go, you know? Like, and that's when everybody gets the best work, because then you're, why would you as a writer, as a writer, like, I'm a words guy, why would I think that I know what if something should be visually, right? Like, let the experts handle that, right? So
yeah, that's pretty, together with those words and these kind of mood boards, for me it becomes really easy to maybe go like almost one shot, because you really have a really precise idea, but then the visual is not there, and slowly it pops up with some sketches and back and forward.
Yeah, and also the deadline on this is very, very short.
Yeah.
So we had to be very precise of what kind of, what we wanted, and so not to go back and forth 10, 20 times, and I think Bobby wrote both back like, all right, I'm done.
When you know, there's often a back and forth. Do you have the iconic Sharon on that? The iconic Mystic?
Yeah.
So often there's a really good back and forth that happens with, you know, both with us and, you know, Remco on these, or with us and Wayne Reynolds when he was doing the Pathfinder iconics. When you get somebody that you really trust right in at the beginning, it's fun to be able to sort of allow the art to inspire the game as much as the game inspires the art. It's not just illustration of the thing. Sometimes you're modeling what's in the illustration. And so a lot of times we'll look at images like this and start figuring out stuff about their culture. Like, so you can't see it right here, but the Sheeran has on his belt a jar with a little like worm guy. Yeah, yeah, perfectly. So he's got that little worm guy in there. And we were looking at that, you know, when it first came in, it was like, oh, that's amazing. What's in there? Sarah was like, what if that's his kid? And it became this this whole thing where it's like, oh yeah, for the first 2 years of their life, like they travel around in these special jars so that they can like see, the parents can show them the world, but they're protected because they're in, you know, the force field jar or whatever. And so it became this whole thing, and like the iconic's backstory is all about him being like a bunch of fans have labeled him Bug Dad. because he's like, you know, he's the dorky dad of the party. And so stuff like that really can come out of just the smallest details. Because from the writing side, we're constantly grasping for ideas. Like, producing cool content on command is really hard. So when somebody gives you something like this, you can just pick out all the details and, like, the art will tell you the story.
And it's
really fun for us. This sort of thing is the most fun part of writing on a game like this.
Yeah. A lot of
yeah. Do you want? I saw you have some ships in there too. Do you want to talk about sort of the process on that? Because that was a lot of back and forth too.
I apologize. I was not really prepared. I was thinking that the hotel would have better Wi-Fi.
Oh, right. What about in that sketch album? That might have secrets in it, but
oh, so we can talk about the cover though.
Oh, sure.
This is an early draft of the cover that we Remco did. It's pretty almost spot on, I think. The initial feedback on this was the vest was a bit too large.
Yeah.
Soto was like, he's only supposed to be like a head taller than the rest of the people.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Oh, but it looks so cool. He's like hovering everybody and, you know, just looking badass and stuff, but like, all right.
But then he would be size large, which creates all these rules problems. That's constantly what we have to do, whereas, you know, something will come in and it'll be like, oh, that's so cool. It doesn't fit the rules, but maybe we'll write some new rules so it works. You know, like, yeah. But other than that, the concept was pretty spot on. And we, like, there was stuff in there that we were trying to get very specifically. Like, you see, Navasi's got that sword in there. We really wanted to make sure that the game came across as science fantasy and not just science fiction. And so it's like, we gotta have a magic sword on the cover. Like, that's, we know that we need that.
Yeah. I think that was one of Eric's criteria.
Yeah.
So we had to have that in there.
I'm actually curious, Rambo, do you want to talk a little about sort of the cover and your process on... I mean, I know we gave you a pretty tight description of, like, these are the four iconics we need, but, you know, was there...
Yeah, I came up with a couple of sketches, and as you saw before, I have to work with black and whites to look at the white stuff and the layout. And once the layout starts to fit in what you guys want to see, I pretty much start painting, actually.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward process, actually. So, and then in between a couple of painting process, I might show it and some stuff happens. Can this one go a little bit more to the left? And then later the ships came in and try to make it all full. You have to keep space for titles. But it's a pretty straightforward process with black and white for approval and then paint.
Yeah. How long did it take you from the point at which you got, you know, sketch approved and you
were... I prefer not to say.
Oh, sure. It took weeks. It took so long.
This can take like a couple of days, full days. If you would count in hours, it would be like 40 hours. It's hard to say that.
Also, did you note how he was like, oh, it takes 40 hours? In a couple of days, yeah. Like that. Those are some long days.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
A lot of work.
It's hard to say actually because you have some back and forwards and you have better and good days and.
Yeah, and
it takes a couple of
days. So throughout like the deadline process, I'll get color, work in progress, and hopefully catch anything that is like, maybe this should be blue or this should be more red.
That guy's got too many arms.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Before the final comes in. Cause what I really hate is when the final comes in and then a couple days later it's like, oh, by the way, I was told that this is supposed to be something else. It's just terrible. Like,
another art tip, always count the number of arms because you'd be surprised how often somebody is missing an arm or has an extra arm, especially when you're like, talking spider creatures and things like that.
Yeah.
Let's see, I'm actually, before we get too much further, should we see if there's any questions real quick?
Oh, is there any questions or anything?
Yeah.
What is the weapon of the best is building?
Oh, so that's actually, so this is another example of sort of the art informing the game, because I don't think we hadn't told you anything except, like, invent a cool weapon for him, right?
It's something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
and then... I was this was like this could make big holes in spaceships. And making big holes in spaceships is good when you're a big little warrior.
Yeah. So this that now is called a Dashko, and that's because we knew from early on that like it's cool to have very specialized, you know, racial weapons, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, everybody recognizes the unique design of like the Klingon weapon, right?
Yeah.
So we wanted to have that same kind of thing where, like, what is a weapon that only somebody from Starfinder has? And so we created this Vesk racial weapon called a Dashko that's always
cool
that.
Name. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's always like the three sort of blades. And sometimes they're plasma, sometimes they're metal, whatever. But it's that three, which then also became part of the symbol of the god of conquest that the Vesk worship. So it really, like, you can see how these little things can ripple out and become a giant part of the setting. And it makes everything kind of tie together when you can have that back and forth flow. Yeah.
Is there any of the other art that shows, kind of like what you did with the Vesk, where it shows holy symbols of the other deities, other fantasy aspects of the setting?
Oh! Do you have, well, holy symbols and stuff. I don't know what Sarah just grabbed, sort of a random collection. Here, actually, wait, go ahead to that camera roll and we'll see if there's anything. Oh, well, actually.
Do we have these?
Final Sirens?
Yeah, yeah. So you can see the Sirens got the holographic holy symbol of Pharasma up there. That was another thing that we just said there should be a holy symbol of Pharasma, and then I think, Remco, did you come up with the holographic projector?
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a great idea, right?
So the Kasatha has on the end of his scarf, it looks like a similar symbol, so...
Oh, so, yeah, those are actually two different symbols. So the Kasatha is a Solarian, and they're all about sort of this balance between energy and entropy, like the cycle of stars and whatnot. And so if you can see... when you see the full image, you'll see that he's got, at one of his end of his scarf, he's got a sun symbol, and at the other one, he's got that kind of black hole symbol, and it's sort of is symbolic of the balance that they're always trying to maintain, which is both in the rules and the flavor. Question way back.
For the cover art, did you opt for more saturated colors to kind of evoke that science fiction feel?
No, not really. I think it's quite much in my style to work with more saturated colors. I love to do that, and I actually and always end up being too colorful. I guess it's part of my style.
But that is something that you were looking for. It was one of the reasons that you were the right fit, right? Because mm-hmm. Sarah wanted more colorful.
Yeah. I worked on a couple of games, Ubisoft, Assassin's Creed and all that stuff. And I often got hit on the hand by my art director. Like, this assassin is too pink or too orange. So I had to tone it down, but when I let go of myself, I'm more colorful.
It's almost got that, like, sort of 70s blacklight poster kind of vibe. No, in a good way.
it's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Just like the really bright, unabashed colors. That's cool.
I love that kind of stuff, and I guess it kind of shows through.
Yeah, and I think that's one of my excitement for this. I wrote back to Remco saying that it was cool. Like, I love all the bright colors in the cover because I think for Pathfinder they're great. I mean, can't put down Wayne Reynolds, but it's very the color palette is very muted, and you know it's the color
palette. It's medieval. They're dirty.
Yeah, exactly. So when we get this, and I'm like, oh my god, I love the colors. It's so awesome. So.
Yeah, I think it's also a way to set it apart, give it really his own kind of feel.
Yeah, that was another thing that we decided, because everybody was like, well, is Wayne going to do the Starfinder? Is Wayne going to do Starfinder? I'm like, no, I'd rather do...
Even Wayne was like, is Wayne going to do Starfinder? Sorry, man.
Which would be awesome if he did, but since they're going to be two different lines, I wanted them to have two very different looks so people can see this is Starfinder and this is Pathfinder. So, and I think we achieved that.
Yeah, absolutely. More questions.
Any other questions?
Not? Well, let's... go for it.
More. You mentioned waiting for the starter part that came in later. So were those designed by someone else?
The starship. Yeah, you want to talk about... we've actually got some starship designs in there, right?
I only have a few. This was a Kasatha.
Yeah.
This is very early concept stuff. So,
And who is, was that Ben at that point, or was that still an
earlier
artist?
No, this was a guy named Guido. Guido? Guido?
It could almost be a guy.
But I think for the Kasatha ones, they were mostly going to be very sleek, very slick, so... And I like the color that he came up with, the kind of a red gold kind of color. And I think this one's probably the final.
Those are pretty close. Like, I think the final versions were maybe a little less. Those are a little softer looking. But Sarah, yeah, like, so you've had several different concept artists on the ships over the course of it, and would bring in a whole bunch of, you see these sketches over on the side. And you can see off to the side there, right, like, a very different idea of, like, what if you flipped the whole thing around and the point of the ship is the tail instead of the nose, like, there's a lot of that. We really wanted to have unique silhouettes of all the ships so that you could immediately tell what is a Starfinder ship, right? And this is just one, you know, style. We wanted to make sure that all the different races or at least, you know, governments had very different styles. So you can see, actually, in that big one, you can see there are a number of different styles, like, you know, these big sort of bulky ones, those are sort of your main sort of human packed world sort of styles. You can see in the background there, these more sort of bulbous ones are more of a insectile feel, so that's more of a Sheeran ship style. And I think there was even a Vesk one up in the corner somewhere. Oh yeah, you just barely see a little Vesk fighter in here that had this cool sort of Y-frame. So really we were always just looking for cool shapes more than anything.
So I think I had about really only two artists on the ships. I think two or three is a good amount. If you have too many of that, then you get all these ideas and you can't really focus on them.
Did the Soki have their own?
The Soki don't, and the reason for that, so there were several reasons why we picked in the core rule book. We give you five different sort of ship styles, and they're broadly race or government sort of aligned. But there were some of them that specifically didn't get in there, and one of them was Yosoki, because we really felt like, being that they're kind of rat folk, they're going to be on everybody's ship. They're going to be anywhere they can, you know, get off planet. So we really thought that they didn't initially need their own style. But like the Kasatha, being from a whole different solar system, that it evolved spaceflight separately, well, their ships should look really different, right? So we were trying to think of ships, not even so much along racial lines, but as, like, makes and models and, like, corporations. Like, what is the Toyota of our world? What is the Ford of our world? And that's how we got, you know, sort of these different styles. Like, you know, it's a very different style of the packed worlds. So, like, big, bulky, very military-looking versus some of these others. More questions.
I got more for somebody else.
Yeah. Actually, I'll ask them. So what is your process like when you're drawing, when you're doing concept art stuff? Like, how do you, when somebody just says, draw us a cool weapon, or...
Actually, I'm quite from a traditional background, so I work a lot on paper. Right. And to get into the process, which is needed because you have to go, like, fast, everything has to go fast inside of the production world, and if it's a video game or a tabletop. And I bought this Cintiq where you draw like directly on screen. So after I do line work, and then I'll start some black and whites to get my shapes out of there. And then I start to add way too bright colors.
Yeah.
And from there on, I manipulate, I flip, I take parts out, I sculpt it, I bring it back, and it's a pretty straightforward process. And once the lines and black is down, I just start painting. And from there on, it's painting and painting and painting.
Yeah. So do you find your own, you know, obviously, you know, we're sending concept boards and stuff where we're like, oh, here's some good reference material, right? But do you find your own stuff where you're like, you know, because we're only sending you a couple of images as reference. Do you also go, oh, you know, I feel like, I love the Fifth Element. I want that to have, you know, some expression.
I try to stay away from that. Somehow I try to stay away as much as possible from stuff that's going around, like art stations or other movies and stuff, because I don't want to be influenced too much. So this is pretty still rough, which would be almost just color on the black and white. And if you keep on painting, this is what finally pops up. And you add shadows, but I try to stay away from influences. Because I don't want to be influenced.
Yeah. You know, this one's really interesting, because I feel like when that, because that was the first Iconic we got in, right? Like,
yeah.
I felt like Sarah and I both were looking at Navasi's face and her expression in that first one. We just went, oh, like, that's so perfect. Like, you capture the character so well. And we didn't know who the character was at that point, you know, like, I think all we had was, like, you know, Lando Calrissian, but as an Asian lady. Like, you know, that was pretty much what we had, right? But you really just captured sort of a spirit of her personality that we could then work with, which was really nice.
Yeah, which comes back to, like, with her, like, it's a lot of back and forth, and like my drawings could eventually inspire you to write, and stuff you write down will inspire me to draw.
Yeah. What about, where does your fashion design come from? Because that was something with a lot of these characters, like, you know, especially, yeah, exactly, right? Like, even more than anything, that outfit is just sick.
I'll go get my t-shirts, actually. Yeah. No, it's, I don't know, it's just stuff that comes and you work, and it's a lot of drugs and alcohol.
Trade secrets.
No, yeah. And now I guess it just comes like that, and then you slowly start to, eventually I might take this out and then put it higher and play around. Still there's some nice balance. And yeah, that's the way it goes.
Do you have your own, with especially something like the Iconics where it's so detailed, do you have your own sort of like secret things that you put in there, like stories you tell yourself? Like I know when we talk to Wayne, you know, we're often like, oh, what's this detail over here? And he's like, oh yeah, let me tell you why he's got that teapot. Because he's like telling himself stories the whole time. Like, how do you come up with those little details? And do you have your own ideas that we don't know about?
It's important to indeed have some storytelling going on. So I did imagine a little bit how she would act inside of this world, who she is. And you need to, because without storytelling, it gets like empty. And storytelling is the most important part of drawing a character. So yeah, often you tell yourself stories,
yeah,
and that's normally where it gets. It's easier to get inside of your character if you know who she really is and what she does, and
yeah.
And then later on, a lot of stuff popped up about how she was, and actually finally, it fitted. It came together as it did. Should.
Yeah. Did you read her backstory in the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. See, it goes full circle.
It's cool. The
life
going.
So I. Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious, like for example, with the Sheeran, where we decided, like, you know, that jar was actually his kid or whatever. Like, did you have an idea of what it was when you put it on?
Before
there?
It became his kid, I actually saw it as weapons.
Oh, really?
Like, a little bit the Star Wars feeling, like you would leave these insects in a room and then. When you leave the room and you come back an hour later, everybody's dead inside. And then you take back your insect. And
so there
finally became his kid.
It went from bioterror to his beloved child.
Tomato's mom.
Yeah, exactly. Do we have more questions?
Description of those children.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, good point. Other questions? Yeah, right there.
So were any of the iconic characters, like, developing the look, give you a lot of problems? Like, it took you a long time to really grasp what the character should look like?
Yeah, who was the hardest iconic?
I guess the hardest eventually was the Vusk, the Vesk. Because there's a lot of armor going on, mm-hmm. And you have to stay practical, like the way it moves, and so with that one I had to move a lot inside of his army to get it done. But as I do this, like, it's I do this as a living, like, since a long time, you start to have, like, a little, it get easier to think it out. So you can pretty straight go to where you should go. But I guess when there's a lot of armor that comes in, the most difficult part is it should look like they can use it. Like, right. If you have this really, really big shoulder pad, but then each time it's like, oh, yeah. So that's the stuff you have to work out, but for the rest, it's pretty straightforward.
I think the one that we really kind of changed up her look was for the shooter.
Oh, yeah.
Let me see if I have that. So.
Yeah.
So this was the initial one that we sent over.
Yeah.
And I liked it. No. Yeah, but
yeah.
I didn't like the hair. The hair was kind of.
You can see, by the way, that I always start with lines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and then I don't know. I just felt like she looked a little too human, and the hair was a little too straightforward. So. I sent him more references, because I think maybe we wanted him more of a weird, like, really big eyes, really small face.
Well, that's right. We were looking for all, like, what are the exotic, like, supermodels where you look at them and you're like,
yeah,
you're not human looking necessarily anymore, right? Like,
right.
You're interesting looking, but you don't look like people. Like, this sounds so terrible, but right? Like,
yeah. Like, going through the drawing, getting some references, and you know, I saw these models with like really skinny faces and really big eyes, and that's kind of cool. So, I was like, here's a few more examples of what the Lashunta face should be. And
make an alien out of this.
Yeah. And eventually,
And the antennae moved. Yeah.
And then Remco added the tattoos are on the eyes, and the scarring around the faces. So I think she turned out pretty cool. After I think that took about 3 rounds of changes and suggestions. So
it's hard to draw a human face without it being human.
Yeah.
Because you have habits, you fall down back to.
Well, the Shunta were an interesting one too, because they were coming out of. We were really trying to change up an existing Pathfinder race. Like, the Shunta had been in Pathfinder as this very 1930s pulp race, where it was like, okay, well, it's all, you know, beautiful women and like short, like stocky dudes. It was very 1930s. Let's put it that way. But we wanted to take them and sort of change them up and figure out like, okay, how can we like acknowledge some of the tropes that the race already had, but bring it into a more modern context where everybody's going to be excited to play them and where it doesn't feel particularly, you know, sexist and whatnot. And so one thing that I got really excited about is this idea of like, the reason the Lashunta are always seen as, you know, beautiful by other races is actually not just because, you know, they're tall or they're muscular or whatever, but because they've got this like perfect symmetry. You know, they talk about how like cross cultures, the thing that tends to get people to think someone is attractive is like bilateral symmetry. Like, do the sides of your face, how close are they to each other? And so just playing with the idea that like Lashunta are attractive at a subconscious level just because they're super, super symmetrical. And so you don't even realize why it is that that as a human you're like, Lashunta, they're all just so, wow. You know, trying to figure out how to play with that was a fun sort of retcon trope. Other questions? Yeah,
so
right there.
Has disfigurement to basically alter that been brought in as a...
So I don't think that's disfigurement. I actually think that's, in my mind, well, I was thinking they actually just have that. I was thinking that probably just grows there. We haven't talked about this yet. like I like to think that the Lashunta, like, those are just the patterns of their skin and whatnot, but those aren't necessarily eye tattoos or makeup. Like, that's just what happens the same way, you know, your cat has patterns on their fur or whatever.
But now, going forward, every illustration that we have has to have some form of the eye tattoo.
Yeah, they need to be fierce.
Yeah.
Like, this is our Bowie race. Like, I want to see. more questions. Otherwise, I'm just going to ask and go all my questions.
Did Lashunta have their own style of architecture and ships that were different than the
other? I mean, they may at some point. They don't in the core rulebook, because we only had a limited amount of space to present a certain number of ships. So we wanted to get kind of the most diverse stuff, where it's like, let's do the Pact World, but then let's do like the Bone Fleet, you know, the Eoxian ship styles, which are these really crazy skeletal kind of things. You know, we wanted to kind of show the full range. And since these folks work so closely with a lot of the other Pact World races, probably it's all the styles have kind of meshed together. Well, and he lost the drone lost the saw, right?
I think it's inside of him.
Yeah. Sorry, I got off track because of the pretty pictures.
A work in progress, and then we came to think about the coloring of the Vesk, and like how can we determine if they're male or female?
We decided that the females should be more colorful, just because.
So that's what I said as reference.
Yeah.
that's a nice one.
Yeah, which is how the current iconic Obozaya got her coloring. But that was one where, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, why did you make it a colorful female instead of a colorful male? You know, like that on Earth, so often it's, you know, colorful males trying to compete for the attention of the females. And that's specifically why we reversed it, because that's a dynamic that is common here on Earth doesn't mean that that's how it has to be.
It's in space.
Yeah, exactly, because it's evolved on entirely different worlds, right? So whenever we can, we try and sort of mix things up, at least, you know, one scooch, just that it's not just the thing you've seen before.
Yeah, but that's in a fantasy altogether. In a fantasy, every fantasy you see is colorful female and bland male. Any sci-fi fantasy is that way.
Sure, right? Yeah. Like, everything's been done before, but at the end of the day, we're just keeping ourselves entertained, and hopefully everybody else wants to come along.
And this is, again, where you see all the line work. Often, if you work with lines, you're more focused on design. You can better focus on design before you get, like, lost in colors and shapes and perspective. So working with lines is, for me at least, a better way to focus on design before I start only painting.
Do you ever leave stuff at the line work stage? Because I feel like this is a different style, but it's a really cool style. Like, do you do illustration of that style?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I try to change styles and the way I approach a lot. Because after a couple of years, if you always have the same way of working, it starts to get boring. So sometimes I start like this, sometimes I start to paint like directly, and it sits too, so I can better stay fresh.
Yeah.
So you worked in the games industry for a while, video games, tabletop now. Just wondering, do you play these games? Does that help you inspire or give you ideas for how the characters
develop? I should play more, but no, I prefer to draw. So no, I keep on drawing and drawing. And especially the Assassin games was like, you get lost in it quickly, like 20 hours, 25 hours. And then my wife passed by and was like, no, I don't play that much anymore.
The question
is, yeah, right there. Is there any particular drawing you guys enjoy the most, or just in particular one of them that just strikes you the others?
We probably all have our favorite. You want to even just pick a favorite iconic?
Well, I think my favorite is probably the Masi.
Yeah.
I think I put a little more of a best in that one.
Well, and you also, like, Navasi was definitely one that was sort of for you in a way, because I remember, like, when I originally was like, yeah, you know, and she'll be, you know, like this and that, and you were like, how about we make her an Asian lady, like, and not, you know, you had some very specific opinions on, like, I feel like I never see this type of character in this type of role, and I was like, oh, yeah, no,
yeah.
You're right, let's do that.
So I think my main idea for her was she was just Asian. I didn't want her to have any like Asian influences on her clothing, or because just like me, I'm Asian, but I'm adopted, that I've been living in the United States forever, and I, you know, kind of lost that Asian cultural that I have. So having someone who's just Asian, because she is
just Asian,
and it's without the. You don't want her to have like a kimono armor or any kind of Asian influence. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like her outfit so much, is because it's just, anyone can wear it.
Yeah. What about you, Ben? Who's your favorite?
I don't have any favorite, actually. I like them all. Isaf would be, I kind of like Isaf, the hair and the glows up in the dark, which makes him pretty easy to find.
I was wondering how you got there with the android. It's I like the art style, but it's quite a change from the prior depictions.
That was actually one that we had talked a lot about early on when we knew we wanted to bring androids forward into Starfinder from Pathfinder. We wanted to make them less human-looking, just because if you're going to have a whole race that's just like, well, here's humans, and then here's these ones that are almost exactly humans unless a specific thing happens, like we wanted to... And at one point, we took them way too far the other direction until they looked kind of like robot people, and then we sort of like found that happy...
medium.
Yeah.
I like the approach where you wouldn't necessarily know they were synthetic if you weren't told they were synthetic, and then you go, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's like... They started out, like, in Pathfinder, they're much more sort of the Blade Runner replicants kind of things, but we definitely took them a stage farther. But then made reasons for why in the canon they look like that instead of like in Pathfinder, and it's because the ones in Pathfinder are this, you know, alien technology or whatever. In Starfinder, people retro-engineered that, and corporations were making their own, right? And this is maybe cheaper or more efficient or, you know... a certain element of sort of machine culture pride, you know, why would I want to look exactly like a human, right? So there were all these reasons behind the look we got. And then I think my favorite is the Sheeran. Keskadi is really, I think just because he's the most different than what I'm used to. Like, I feel like we got a really interesting look. When, like, look at, he's got the mustache. That was the point that really sold the personality for me, which is like, oh, he is so proud of his mustache. He thinks he looks like Burt Reynolds. Like, he's, and that, like, the character just all fell together for me when I
Burt
noticed
Reynolds.
That. Yeah, exactly, right? Burt Reynolds. Other questions?
I always thought of a description I read about the forearm, I forget about the guy.
Yeah.
I always read it, it was more like the John Carter Mars of, and this here doesn't look quite like John Carter, it looks kind of like Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, so
and John Carter Mars.
There's a couple reasons for that. One of them obviously is wanting to do our own thing that's, you know, very recognizable as Starfinder. But then another reason is that we actually have a very similar John Carter Green Martian analog already established in the world, the Shobods, who live on Akaton and are very, you know, nothing actionable, but like they're very inspired by that genre. And so having already had those in the world, then it's like if we're going to do Kasatha, they need to be something different.
I mean, they look really cool, you know, I really like it, but I always thought it was kind of shocked. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's kind of trying to take tropes and then change them. Like, we don't generally want to just pull wholesale. So we got time for, like, one more question, probably. One or two. Yeah.
Yeah, was there any special, like, development with spell artwork?
Spells?
Not really.
It was mostly
not yet.
It was mostly just like some spells, you know what they look like, right? Like if you're zapping somebody with a lightning bolt, like that should still just look like a lightning bolt. But when we were illustrating the spells, there were definitely some like a microbot assault spell where it's you're summoning this swarm of like little things almost like what is that movie? I'm blanking out, but you guys probably all know the horror movie where, like, there's the little silver ball that has the horrible...
Phantasm,
thank you. where we're like, what if you had a spell where you summoned a bunch of the horrible little phantasm spiky ball thing? Well, that's sick. so that ended up in the book and looks great, right? But yeah, I mean, the honest truth is, some of this stuff, the stuff we're talking about here is where we put in all the concept design work, and we're very, like, proud of ourselves. A lot of stuff is like, oh man, we need that next week, and it needs to look cool. That's what it needs to look like, is cool.
Was there any, you talked about how writing and you tell them what kind of picture you need, but is there anything that you got back and said, wow, we need to really create something totally new for the setting based on this artwork?
Something brand
something
new.
Unexpected that you decided to add to the setting?
You know, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of stuff that I think we probably will add over time. But a lot of times it's the detail, right? You know, it's the...
Hope.
Yeah, it's the kid, it's the holographic projector. you know, on Obaziah's back, which is like, you know, you think about the samurai with the sashimono sort of like battle flags, like, you know, for her, it's really the idea of it's the same thing, but a holographic projector, so that when she's in a battle, the enemy knows exactly who's coming to kill her, right? Like, they want to make sure that they know it's her, right? So it's all those little details that come from the art and then inform the world.
Is there an extra arm on the side there? Got to count him.
Oh, no, no, he's got four. That one's on purpose.
It's expensive from gloves.
All right, well, I think that's about it. We should probably wrap it up. Is there anything else you want to show off real quick?
I just have a few environments that I think you can show.
Some of these are banquet tonight. So you guys are seeing secret things right now. This is Versace. So Versace is the planet that's tidally locked, so that one side is always facing the sun and one side's always facing away. So the only place where it's really got good conditions for life is right on the Terminator line, where sort of light meets dark. And so they're a very industrialized society. So that entire ring is pretty much one giant mega city called the Ring of Nations. And so you can see it's kind of our New York, Coruscant, whatever have you. This is mining in the diaspora. So that's our asteroid belt. Lots of people mining out here. Dwarves really like it out here. This is a major city on Avalon, which is our machine world, so you can see all the cool robots. And actually, the little robot designs I really enjoy because they're so different, and the artist just came up with a bunch of random ones. That was awesome.
I saw that one.
That street scene, I love that scene so much just because of the guy with the goggles right in the middle. Like, he just pulls you into the scene. Yeah.
So, one last image. I don't think anybody has seen this one.
Oh, yeah. That's like too big. Oops, you can get all the way.
I know.
Let's go back.
So, this is the scene that's on the GM screen for Starfinder. So, it's a full 4-panel wrap scene. And I think we got all of the iconics on there.
Yeah, they're all on there, yeah. Along with, you can see in the background there a bunch of the different ship types. I can count at least three different ship styles, or like ship brands as well as individual ship models. And that monster in the background is also a supersized version of something that you'll see in our free RPG Day product. And then of course you've got all the undead soldiers and stuff down at the bottom there. So. Yeah, I love that piece.
Yeah. I think that's it.
That's what we got. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.